Another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. Thanks for checking out the show. If you can, follow me on Twitter at Conspiracy or JC if you're still there. If you're not, I am on Gab as well at Conspiracy or JC. I also put the videos, so if you do like watching the video version better, you can check those out. I put all the interviews up there, and Gab's a great platform if you're not using it. The time on Twitter is limited, right? So also, I've got awesome Patreon supporters. Check out my boy Moral Bob, where I'm doing a show with him on Thursday, and Gary Wayne, which is going to be awesome. And the Patreon keeps getting a few more people. So George, Rob, Kyle, Quentin, thanks for your support. Also, I totally get that we all cannot support the show. It's a crazy time. If you listen on Apple or anywhere you listen, please leave a review and I'll give you a shout out on the show. So Phil Goodrich, who has a podcast, it's at Phil Goodrich. Check him out. Please, anybody else that wants to add it or leave a review, just leave your Twitter handle or DM me or comment at me and I'll give you a shout out on the show. So I think that is all the business stuff. Yes, that's all the business stuff. This is a great episode. So I got a name, Philip Fairbanks. Philip, he just wrote or recently released a book called Pedogate Primer, The Politics of Pedophilia. And it is it's a shorter book. So anybody that's like not a big reader, this will be perfect for you. It's not too overwhelming, but I thought like I knew a decent amount. I know stuff about the Nebraska scan, you know, all that stuff happened in Nebraska. But Philip, he goes deeper into things I've never heard of that we're going to go over on the episode. But just how this has been going on forever. I mean, our famous authors of Alice in Wonderland and Peter Pan all have pedophilia inclinations. And he's just spent a lot of time on this tough subject. So please, he's on Kindle Unlimited. If you guys aren't on Kindle Unlimited, this is not an ad or a sponsor for the show. But Kindle Unlimited is such a good way. I always talk about how put your energy in stuff that isn't the church or part of the church awoke. And books are one of the few things we have left. So stop giving your energy to video games and all this stuff. Increase your brain power. You'll blow people away with facts. And you can always correct people whenever they say things that are incorrect. So it's a win-win-win-win. But Philip is awesome. He really like did such a good job on this book. So we're going to interview him and hear, you know, all he's learned. And you're really going to enjoy the episode because it is clearly there's something with pedophilia that happens either when they get power or in order to be part of power. And we know this from Epstein, all these things. But this book will definitely help you explain to anybody that maybe not into the conspiracy world of how rampant this disease or whatever this, how it's infected the upper echelons of our power structure in America and the world. So enjoy this episode. Follow me on Twitter, follow me on Gab at Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. If you can support the show, awesome. If you can't, I get it. Leave a review. And I think that's pretty much it. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for listening. You're going to really enjoy this episode. And keep reading, keep learning, and keep fighting the fight. All right, I'll talk to you soon. Peace. All right, everyone, welcome to another episode. Today I have an awesome guest, Philip. He wrote this book, Pedogate Primer, The Politics of Pedophilia, and obviously a very dark topic. We see this like trend of pedophilia that has seeped into, like infected each part of the elite cultures in our world. So, Philip, thanks for all your hard work. How are you doing today?
Well, you know, I've been better, but I've been worse. So I won't complain. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is such a dark topic. So how did you, like, what made you pick this? I mean, everyone should check out his book. I'll post it. If you have Kindle Unlimited, it's actually there for, so it's an awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. You can actually check it out free if you got Kindle Unlimited. Yeah. I recorded a audiobook version that will be uploading and so that'll be available on Audible as well. If you can stand to listen to my voice for hours, then that's an option. I appreciate it. But you know, no, like, in all seriousness, it's a really dark topic, yeah. But I've had so many friends, and like, you know, two of my exes were raped by their stepfathers. Jeez. And I've got other exes who, you know, like multiple exes, multiple friends. I don't know. And I don't know if I'm, you know, if people just open up to me, if I seem like, you know, somebody you can open up to, right, or what it is, or like maybe everybody knows just a ton of people who were abused as kids. And I just hear about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, like I've had so many people open up to me about their stories. I was there, you know, I've mentioned it before that, you know, I was the one who convinced two of my exes to confront their rapist, wow, their rapist in front of their mom, who was still with the rapist, right? Like that's it's, you know, like talk about an uncomfortable situation. It's yeah, it's not a room you want to be in.
Absolutely
but
not.
But you know, like once you've heard these stories, once you know that this is going on, mm-hmm, I don't know. It's sort of like a, I guess, crusade. I don't know. Mm. It's that, and I don't know. I very much, like, I remember being a kid, and you're innocent, and you're kind of dumb. You know, kids are a lot sweeter than they are smart. You know, they're smart in some ways, but in other ways, they're just not at all worldly, mm, and not at all, you know, wise. And, you know, I don't know. I remember being a kid and like, you know, the big people world and how grownups don't pay attention and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I very clearly remember this kind of stuff. And mm-hmm, so yeah, it's a topic that I personally can't look away from, even though many other people, that's one of the reasons why this, you know, kind of thing flourishes, because it exists and subsists in darkness. You know, the less people talk about it, the less people know about it. You know, the term child abuse didn't exist in academia until, like, I think it was 1962, and I can't remember the sociologist, and he introduced what was called battered child syndrome. Okay. So before 1962, there was nothing in the annals of academia about pedophilia or child abuse. And in fact, the first mention of child abuse was just battered child syndrome, physical abuse, not sexual abuse. So it, you know, it's kind of mind blowing to think that just about 50, 55 years ago, the idea of child abuse, yeah, was introduced to academia, and then it slowly, you know, seeps into mainstream society from there. But before that, it was pretty much invisible. And like, you know, the book Pedogate Primer starts out in the, you know, the 19th century, the late 1800s. It's you know, it's pretty much a modern account. I hesitate to call it exhaustive, though it may be exhausting to get through, because it does. Like, I tried to cover as many different topics as I could, just yeah, like, because it's so pernicious, and it, you know, from the top levels of society to the bottom, and for, no, you know, you know,
so interesting that I love, because I'm like, I'm not a big video game, but Red Dead Redemption, do you know that? But it's like in the 1800s.
Yeah.
And that, so I've been like loving learning about that era. And I was amazed, like these, I mean, I'll let you tell, but like how these key figures in our culture and children's books.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The, like J.M. Barrie and Lewis Carroll, for instance. Mm-hmm. Charles Lutwidge Dodgson is the name of the mathematician, and Lewis Carroll is the famous pseudonym. But, you know, both Barry, who wrote Peter Pan, and Lewis Carroll, author of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, in both cases, they were very likely, you know, most modern biographers and academics say that they were likely very repressed pedophiles who didn't mm-hmm. act on their urges, especially in the case of Barry. In the case of Lewis Carroll, there is some, you know, kind of murkiness about why he was banished from the Liddell household, because there was a real Alice Liddell, okay. who the story Alice's Adventures was written for. And we don't know why he was banished from that home. We also don't know why, after he died, certain pages from his diary are missing. Likely a family member is you know, the best guess. Best guesses that I've read is that it was likely a family member after he died. Even just the terms Never Never Land and Wonderland, these are terms that have been used to self-identify pedophile groups and organizations, and NAMBLA, and you know, all these different groups have used certain key figures and metaphors and themes from, you know, these stories. It really is bizarre to think of how, like, these are two of the most beloved and enduring children's classics.
Yes.
But they were both written by some guys that, if you really look into their history, whether or not they actually touched children or not, you know, it's the same thing like with Michael Jackson. I'm on the fence about Michael Jackson as to whether or not he ever, you know, molested physically molested boys. But regardless, once you realize that, you know, your parents dangled you in front of an obvious pedophile in order to later sue him, you know, that's child abuse too. It's a form of sexual abuse. Just like, even if he was just wanting to reclaim his childhood or whatever, it's not your place to steal someone else's childhood to reclaim your own.
Yeah.
So, like I said, with the book kind of starts off in the late 1800s, and with, like I said, these children's authors, and also the Cleveland Street scandal, which that involved or it's very likely that it involved Oscar Wilde, who was mm-hmm. himself accused of pederasty and got hit harder than anyone else in the history of the UK for the charges of homosexuality. It's at least very possible that the reason that he was targeted was he had some dirt on, you know, the prince was possibly implicated, and, you know, almost everybody that was involved in Oscar Wilde's trial on both sides, defense and prosecution, are embroiled in this Cleveland Street scandal, which, if you're familiar with the Franklin scandal, it's very, very similar phenomenon, right down to the fact where you've got kids acting as couriers and possibly drug mules, possibly as well as being used as escorts, right. as sex slaves for some of the richest and most powerful people in society at the time. In the one case in the 1880s and 1890s of London, and then, you know, in the 1970s and 80s in the U.S.
Right.
with Lawrence King, no relation to the other Larry King,
right.
by the way.
Yes.
Don't want people to get confused. No, but Lawrence King, who, you know, was he was tight with who's the Supreme Court justice, Supreme Court justices and presidents and vice presidents.
Yeah,
and
he was
very well connected.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Especially for such, like, you know, he kind of came out of the blue. He ended up with tons of money. Mm-hmm. You know, a similar situation that we see with Epstein, you know, or with JonBenet Ramsey's father. That's another, you know, like I always, you know, I've read a lot about the JonBenet Ramsey case.
Okay.
But one thing that I have never learned, well, yeah, it's it. I guess it's because I was raised in the 90s, and so when that happened, I was young enough for old enough for it to sink in how truly awful it was, and young enough for it to, like, I don't know, just kind of lodge in my psyche there. But yeah, the JonBenet's parents, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, they are definitely involved in the murder, but they were definitely at least complicit in some way in the fact that she was abused before she died. She was possibly also a victim of, you know, child pornography. You know, one of her former photographers was the subject of a child porn investigation after her death. The point got sidetracked there, but coming back around to the point I was trying to make, Access Graphics, that's JonBenet's father's company that he sold to, like, Lockheed Martin for, you know, millions, you know, and Lockheed Martin, of course, is, I mean, one of major military industrial complex companies, you know. There are people at Boeing and Lockheed who have got security clearance. You know, they don't work for the government, but they've seen what's behind the door marked top secret, you know. So, it is kind of weird that this guy came out of nowhere, all of a sudden sells Access Graphics. And I've read hundreds of pages about JonBenet Ramsey. I have not found a single page that explains what Access Graphics was, what they do, you know, how why they were worth so much money. But like I said, in the case of there's certain themes that you see follow through so many of these different cases, like with Epstein, goes from being a he was a tutor, and then he was a professor, and then he was on Wall Street, and then he's a billionaire, and nobody can, and he didn't even have, like, the degree to teach it's just so many missing pieces in a lot of these cases.
Do you think, from, like, your studies, I know it's like the chicken or the egg kind of thing, but do you think that this is, like, a part to be in this group because they need to have blackmail on you? Or do you think it's something that happens, like, because power infects these individuals and they have all this fame, and do you understand where I'm at? Like,
I think it's a bit of column A and a bit of column B for sure. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. I just want, because I always, like, it's so weird how this just seems to.
Power corrupts.
Oops, I think I'm losing you here.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
There we go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't hear what you said, though.
Okay, sorry about
that.
There
we go. Now I got you.
Okay.
All right, we're back. All right, sorry about that.
Oh, yeah, sorry. It's my connection, I'm sure. But, yeah, no, like I was saying, a bit of column A, a bit of column B.
Okay.
I definitely think that that because it's such an inherent thing that, you know – humans naturally want to protect, you know, the infants and children and the elderly and, you know, those who can't take care of themselves. You know, that's just something that's we're hardwired for.
Right.
Our mammalian forebrain is hardwired for empathy. So it really does seem to be like, you know, this sort of vice of kings, I guess. You know, if you've got everything, if you can have everything, if you've done everything, then you start maybe craving other things. And it definitely is a good way to keep people in power under a thumb. So I definitely believe that in the security state and in certain circles in Hollywood and elsewhere, that it is pretty much par for the course that, you know, we've got pictures of you, we've got everything, we can make or break you, and now you're, you know, just sit back and you're in for the ride.
Right.
So yeah, I definitely think that there are a lot of cases where you know it is you know connected to the power thing, and in some cases it's a bit of both. But yeah, no, and I definitely don't think it's anything new either.
Yeah.
I think that the Cleveland Street scandal papers didn't come to light until I think the 1970s.
Okay.
So there were decades where nobody knew about this. And then all of a sudden it's outed that maybe the prince was involved in this, you know, wow, the scandal involving running young boys as sex slaves and under the guise of being telegraph couriers. So, you know, and I don't believe that that's the first case and certainly not the last.
Right. I also found super interesting, you know, and your false memory syndrome foundation.
Oh, wow. Ever, yeah.
Can you explain? Because that was like, it was like someone.
Okay. Yeah.
It. Yeah. It was wild.
Yeah. The false memory syndrome foundation is oddly enough, it's a mixture of very high caliber academics. You know, Dr. Elizabeth Loftus is considered pretty much like one of the premier memory scientists in the world. She's, mm-hmm. you know, she's probably one of the most famous female psychologists in all of history. And she was also on the scientific advisory board of the False Memory Syndrome Foundation. So you've got folks like Dr. Richard Offshee, who on the one hand, I've got a lot of respect for him because, you know, he fought Scientology back in the 80s as well, you know. But on the other hand, he also hitched his wagon to this group, which at best was a little shady. You know, in 1992, Dr. Jennifer Fried, who was herself, by the way, a memory researcher, accused her father of sexual assault. And then he starts an organization called the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, which, by the way, false memory syndrome, everybody's familiar with the idea of, or most people are anyway. I mean, it comes up in movies like, was that Memento? And, you know, there's so many like popular culture references, like even the Mandela effect and the Berenstain Bears thing,
right,
is sort of like similar to the idea of false memory syndrome, the idea that you could retrieve a memory of something that never happened. And by the way, I do believe that that's possible. I do believe that successful people can be implanted with false memories.
Right.
That,
absolutely.
You know, that was one of the goals of the CIA MK Ultra mind control program, which is why it seems weird to me that you've got a mixture of CIA MK Ultra former alumnus and, you know, high caliber heavy hitters, big name academics, and And on the other hand, you've got like accused child pornographers and a guy who, you know, multiple guys, but one of the worst is Ralph Underwager. This guy was an expert witness for the foundation on hundreds of cases. And then later it comes out, he decides to be interviewed for Paedica, which is a Dutch journal of pedophilia. And he's talking about how, you know, pedophilia is this great thing. And, you know, it's a way to get closer to God, he says, which, by the way, is really similar to what the group, the family, also known as the Children of God, another cult, which with possible CIA ties, also put forth the same idea. And you know, the Children of God, by the way, you know, that's just one of the cults mentioned in the book. I've got a whole chapter on the cults, and then another chapter on religious abuse. And you know, sadly, in both cases, you know, you've got the idea that, you know, you should respect spiritual authorities unquestioningly. And then you add the veil of secrecy to that, and it's a perfect you know, smokescreen for pedophiles, child molesters, right, abusers of all sorts. And in Scientology, you know, L. Ron Hubbard has got a history. He died on board a ship with multiple underage girls in hot pants who were called the Commodores, and you know, like he would send messages through them. And once again, there's that theme again too, which like I said, the Franklin scandal, the kids were used also as, you know, to send messages and things back and forth. But yeah, the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, there's definite ties the CIA's MK Ultra program, which is why I find it so interesting that these are folks who like don't believe in dissociative identity disorder, right, and you know, they came out with statements in favor of guys like Jerry Sandusky, you know,
right,
come on, Jerry Sandusky and Woody Allen and. Mm-hmm. The Dr. Loftus even testified. Well, okay, let me choose my words very carefully here. She was called as a witness for the defense in the Harvey Weinstein trial.
Wow.
Now I've seen where she and other people have argued on her behalf that, you know, she wasn't defending Harvey Weinstein. She was just you know, giving expert testimony on how the memory works and how faulty memory can be, and how eyewitness testimony and right, and false memories and, you know, all this kind of stuff.
I was just gonna say, like, for everyone, memory syndrome people, they would like stop these cases and say the kids are misremembering, basically. But so they had all these powerful people. Like, who do you think was fund? Like, what was the purpose of that group? You know, I found that like wild that they would come into these situations and like see doubt, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I also find it weird that one of the members of the False Memory Syndrome Foundation was in the case of when the Catholic abuses were brought to light, a member of the False Memory Syndrome Foundation was supposed to be involved in the investigation process, and there was, you know, that raised quite an uproar at the time. As for whether they were definitely CIA connected or if they were definitely MK Ultra connected, I don't think that there's, and that's the problem with a lot of this, like, you know, Dr. Ruth Wangerin, when talking about the children of God and whether or not they were CIA or not. You know, I'll use her, you know, borrow from her. Basically, you can't say, yes, this is definitely CIA connected, because that's not how the security state works.
Right.
In most cases, there's not a smoking gun. We can say we know how they work, and this, you know, these things add up, and this looks very similar. And we're seeing all these same names and the same kind of activity. You know, another of the cases that's brought up that's definitely got a CIA tie, though, that kind of ties into that, because, you know, you had the Satanic Panic era. And I do believe that some of the Satanic Panic was way overblown. You know, the idea that, like, if you play Dungeons and Dragons, right, you're going to kill your parents, and and karate is a doorway to the occult. And it's right. Like, maybe in some very rare outlier cases,
yeah,
like somebody who has already had a propensity for violence, played a violent video game, and was inspired by it.
Right.
But it's not statistically significant, I don't think.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, the a lot of the Satanic Panic stuff really primed us for the false memory syndrome era, mm-hmm, which I think we're still in the false memory syndrome era.
Interesting.
Because once again, despite the fact that, you know, the organization itself closed down last year.
Okay.
At the end of 2019, end of December 2019, actually. But, like, most people have never heard of this group, but they've definitely been influenced by what, you know, a writer for the Columbia Journalism Review called them, basically, you know, a massive PR machine, mm-hmm, because they were able to get all, you know, legislators and journalists and legal experts, and they get all of this lined up just right to really change the way people thought about children giving testimony about their own abuse, even adults giving testimony about abuse that they received as children was viewed as possibly suspect after the Satanic Panic era and the idea of, you know, recovered memories, the danger of recovered memories in this witch hunt. And, you know, if for folks that are interested in that topic, by the way, Professor Ross Chite, that talk about real another hard book to read. It's actually probably a lot more graphic than Pedogate Primer, which I try to make as palatable as possible, since it is such a difficult topic. The witch hunt narrative by Professor Chite, I think it does a great job of showing where in some cases there was some suggestive questioning that went on. Sometimes cases started out right, and then all of a sudden, you know, something went wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're interested in justice and truth, then, you know, you want, you, like, I think it's easy to get caught up, especially when it comes to a topic like this, which is why, like, you know, in the book, I try to be really careful with my sourcing, and, you know, I don't get too out there with, you know, conjecture or conspiracy theory. I try to stick with what we know, what's available, what's, you know, what are the facts as they stand, because, yeah, you know, like, you know, the like, I'll use you know, the Pizzagate and QAnon.
Yeah,
like,
maybe, yeah.
People hear, like, whenever something like that, a phenomenon like that occurs, I think that there are disinfo agents who really, mm-hmm, jump on that kind of thing and are quick to push really wild stuff that, you know, I'm not saying that there's not cannibalism or whatever,
right,
or drinking blood. But I don't believe there's enough compelling evidence of it that, like, let's not get bogged down in details of what might be. when we can, the facts are gory enough as it is. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't need to go down rabbit holes of what all else might be in order to get the point across that this is something that, you know, like I said, from the top strata to the very bottom of society and in every type of, you know, like, it would be so easy if it was just Democrats or just Republicans or just Satanists or right. just Catholics or just cult members or just, you know, pick a group and put right. just in front of it. Yeah. And it would make life so much easier, but it's not like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it ties into so many different groups and so many different, you know, the Lincoln Project is, you know, a really good example that didn't make it into the book
right.
because, you
yeah.
know, as of the press date, it was still mostly rumored stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, like that's that the, over and over again, you know, organizations, another one of the things that I get into is like charity organizations and the UN and UNICEF and these, you know, NGOs and Oxfam and these charities, their whole purpose is purportedly to make life better for mm-hmm. people who, you know, who are vulnerable
right.
and to then take that position and then twist it and pervert it to actually, you know, it's like it's hard to deal with.
Yeah.
But it goes on time and time and time again. You know that's a subject that eventually I will do a further coverage, like just in the nonprofit sector alone, because like in a lot of these cases it's then monetized and you know it's a form of reputation laundering, possibly also money laundering and then child abuse just heaped on top of all of that. It's definitely, I don't know, it makes me think twice before, you know, because I used to give to UNICEF, you know,
right,
and I can't anymore, you know, and it's not just like one abuse scandal.
No,
like search UN child sex scandal. And then there's the one, which one do you want? You want the one from the wow. 70s, the one from 2012, the one from, you know, like it's not like a one-time thing or, oh, well, it happened a couple of times. No, like, you know, time and time again, these organizations, NGOs, and, you know, like I mentioned the Finders Cult. The Finders Cult.
Yes, that's what's going to be my next question, case, dude. That's so funny.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I wanted to talk about.
Oh, my gosh.
That was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell everyone about the Find, because I never heard of that before.
Oh, well, wow. Yeah, yeah. The Finders Cult, when it comes to the whole like satanic panic thing,
mm-hmm.
like the saying where there's smoke, there's fire. The Finders Cult was the smoke, and when the CIA squelched it became a police investigation, and then it became a police investigation in three jurisdictions, and mm-hmm. then the feds got involved. And once it starts out with customs agents, and then they find these telex documents about selling children, that there's pictures of kids naked, and there's kids sacrificing goats and playing with their innards and all this stuff, and they've got a pretty good case here. And then all of a sudden the CIA comes in and says, okay, this is now an internal investigation. An internal investigation. And then all of a sudden, you know, like overnight, everything shifts. So like that's the one case where we definitely know that the CIA was involved in this group. whether they just had people embedded, you know, their claim at the time, and that's another issue. It's like, you know, well, the CIA said it. Can I believe them?
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, like there's the FBI released in the FBI vault. It's 200 or 300 pages worth of documents related to the Founders Cult. And it's, you know, it makes for some pretty wild reading, especially when you consider the fact that this was, you know, this is during the height of the Satanic Panic era. Okay. And it seems to tick off all the, now, of course, I don't believe that they were Satanists per se. I don't even know that they were occultists per se. I think that they just, you know, cultists, yes, occultists, I'm not so sure. But apparently, like I said, you know, when everything hit the fan, the CIA just basically says, okay, pack it up, folks, nothing to see here. We'll take care of this. It's an internal investigation right now.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Like, a friend of mine once said, when, you know, heard about the, after Epstein had died, and then they sent the feds to his island to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
And, artist friend of mine, artist and craftsman friend of mine, I remember him saying something along the line, that's like having your junkie friend help you search the house for the weed that he stole from you, you know, sending the feds in there. Like, right. Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm really gonna like, it's like on the books, you know, the Freedom of Information Act documents and all this kind of stuff, you know, the things like the CIA's mind control project, mm-hmm. MK Ultra, or Project Paperclip, where folks that should have been on trial at Nuremberg were, well, I don't know, for security purposes, it would be nice to have their scientific brain working for the CIA.
Right.
So we could sneak them out of Nazi Germany and have them work for us. You know, when you hear so many of these stories, and like I said, it's not talking about conspiracy theories here. I'm talking about just what's on the books,
right.
What can be declared. You get a sense that, yes, the security state is not our friend. John Marx wrote the book, the Cult of National Intelligence, and I do believe it does function in that way. You know, there are ties, I think, to the occult and the security state and these networks, because I don't think it's a single network, but I think there are multiple. I mean, we know that there are multiple billionaire pedophiles. We got there's Peter Nygaard, Justin Trudeau's billionaire buddy Epstein. There was the DuPont heir who raped his 3-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
You know, so like there are not that many billionaires in the world, but it doesn't take me long to just off the top of my head name off a handful of them who are child rapists.
Okay. True.
So, like, you know, you got the money and the power and the control and the security state. And I definitely believe that there is a connection somewhere.
Right.
But, like I said, except for in the case of maybe the Finders Cult is the closest to a smoking gun we have connecting, like, you know, the occult / cult angle and child abuse and trafficking to the security state. But apart from that, like, you know,
could you talk about the Patch Adams connection with the Finders Cult as well?
Oh, wow. I forget that sometimes, because Patch Adams, who if you recall, you know, there's the Robin Williams movie immortalized Patch Adams. Mm-hmm. But now every time I see a picture of a real guy, and I just picture that guy in a clown suit, and like I'm really unsettled. But yeah, Patch Adams of all people, the doctor, the beloved child's doctor who dressed up as a clown, he was friends with what is it, Marion Petty, the game caller, the guy that, and who, by the way, his wife was wife and son were tangentially connected to the security state itself. He himself was never in the CIA, but apparently, like, one of his hobbies was doing to the CIA what the CIA did to people. And that's possibly why that's possibly where the connection starts, by the way, because, you know, the, like, they had, like, somebody who was a member of the Finders cult made it to, like, USSR and Red China and, like, in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
You know, they ending up in all these places. Same thing with the Children of God cult, by the way.
Okay.
They ended up in all these places where, ironically, at the same time, the CIA is conducting covert activities. There are signs like that left in some of these cases, but in most cases, you can't really definitively say, you know, like even with the Finders cult, we know that the CIA said it's an internal investigation. And they later went on to say, oh, well, some of them had gone bad, they'd gone rogue, whatever the official terminology they used. But that they'd use these guys for something. They were subcontractors or something.
Right.
So they weren't like literal CIA agents, but some or all of the members were at least contractors or subcontractors of the CIA.
Jesus.
And Patch Adams is connected in with all the mess too, which and you know, I encourage people, seriously, look up Patch Adams, look at this guy, look at him in the clown makeup, and yeah, let me know if you would let him near your kid, like, because like I don't know, this is right. Something about like standing up for the Finders cult, which, you know, in the case of the Children of God and the Finders cult, in both cases, they found like pamphlets that had, you know, how to procure children, you know, whether it was, you know, having members of the cult, you know, taking their kids, or, you know, finding drug addicts, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Jeez,
but man. Like, you know, in both of those cases, there, you know, like there's these multiple like pamphlets where they're telegraphing their actions. The Children of God, by the way, you know, there are multiple murders and suicides connected to that group. And the David Moses Berg, who was the founder, never saw justice, you know. You know, enclaves of the Children of God, also known as the family, you know, this or that, you know, in Australia, in France, in UK, in America, you know, there would be like, you know, the cops would come in and they would take the kids. And, you know, after all these allegations of abuse, and, you know, I mean, by God, they've literally got like documents where they talk about, you know, like I said, telegraphing their actions. So just the fact that they were afforded that kind of smokescreen, right, that alone to me is really suspect.
Right.
So yeah, like, and I think in the case of Epstein, for instance, I definitely think that there was an intelligence connection to the Epstein operation. I think that blackmail was a big part of it.
Okay.
You know, and Ghislaine Maxwell, for instance, you know, her dad wrote the Promise software, which was basically like an early backdoor/Trojan type they were selling this software to all these different governments, you know, unbeknownst to the people buying it. They were basically, you know, purchasing a backdoor into their own system that the CIA could use. And Robert Maxwell, you know, he's the father of Ghislaine Maxwell. He ended up, he jumped off of his yacht naked, apparently.
Weird.
As in all, by all appearances, he committed suicide. I don't know if you've got it, if you've got $1 billion and you've got multiple intelligence agencies who you could make or break, I'd say you could probably do a pretty effective disappearing act. I'm not gonna say that, like, you know, Jeffrey Epstein's not dead or whatever. But, you know, in the case of Robert Maxwell, in the case of Jeffrey Epstein, I'd say if they wanted to disappear, you know, they had the means and the connection.
For Maxwell, especially. That's a great point. It could have, he was like the precursor of Epstein in a way. You know, like the trial run.
Yep.
Wow.
Exactly. Exactly. The big billionaire runs afoul of multiple of the Mossad. You never cross streams with the CIA and the Mossad at the same time. That's right. Like, it's a law of nature. Okay, you don't get in between the CIA and the Mossad. You know, like, you can work with the CIA and the Mossad, but you don't work against the CIA and the Mossad at the same time.
So I think
it's as likely that they faked their deaths or coordinated their deaths as that they were murdered, as that they actually committed suicide. You know, I don't think we can say for sure. It definitely makes me wonder, though.
The last topic I wanted to touch on was, like, because I guess people's responses that aren't, I mean, everyone's aware, but, like, this can't happen now. And, you know, like, now you don't hear about this stuff happening. So I wanted to go over, like, your last chapter, or the second last, the digital playground with, like, YouTube and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And just, like, what should people, parents or anyone, be aware of now? Because it's so, you know, the internet is like a whole new world for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Because, like I said, in the book, I try to give examples of all across the spectrum, from, you know, from mainstream religion to various cults and whatnot. And the last chapter, though, is primarily about, like, online exploitation of children, and how, you know, companies like, you know, Zuckerberg's Instagram, Facebook, and WhatsApp are all three owned by Zuckerberg. And if you put the three of them together, that forms 2/3 to 3/4 of where most child exploitation or grooming occurs. And of course, you know, I was writing about the whole YouTube wake up phenomenon. I was writing about that for almost 2 years straight before, like, what was it, Matt Watson or whatever, some YouTuber who wasn't even, like, a well-known YouTuber, just came out of the blue with this viral video and kind of stole the show. And then people started looking into this guy, and it sounds basically like this guy kind of held a grudge that he hadn't done well on YouTube and wanted to, you know, I don't know if that's the case or not. I've seen a lot of people disparage the guy and say that. But what's sad is that the point I'm trying to make is that there were a lot of people involved in looking into this and trying to raise awareness about this for years before the New York Times finally had a front page story that YouTube is a digital playground for pedophiles, was the quote that they used. I'm like, wait, that's what I've been saying for 2 years.
Right. Very interesting.
Like, you know, and hey, I don't mind getting scooped, because as soon as the New York Times says it, then it's not my wild conspiracy theory anymore. Now it's real news. Now it's actually the truth. But yeah, no, that had been something that I've been writing about for about 2 years straight. You know, there's a lot of apps that are very suspect. You know, like I don't want, like, you got to be careful as far as like advice to parents. Mm-hmm. I would say be very careful. Find a middle ground, because on the one hand, you want to keep your kids safe. Right. On the other hand, though, being too overbearing. And, you know, I came from a really, you know, fundamentalist, very strict upbringing. And let me just say that eventually you do get out into the world. You will, you know, right. if you're kept from doing this and this and this and this, then you will seek out a lot of that later, elsewhere, that's somewhere. True. So, you know, the best thing you can do, I would say, is be present. Be like, communicate yeah. with your kids. Like a lot of the times, the ones who are the most vulnerable to grooming and exploitation, it's because they're seeking out some sort of connection that they're not finding at home. It's flocks of pedophiles out there online. And you know, that's, it sounds like hyperbole, but you know what, just check out the DOJ's Project Safe Childhood. There is a new case every day. There are new cases every day, and these are just the convictions. These right. are just the people who, and now we've convicted them, you know. Right. So and the convictions are just the tip of the iceberg, I believe. But there's a steady trickle daily of cases of online exploitation. And, you know, a lot of the apps, WhatsApp and Kick were two of the worst offenders, by the way.
Interesting.
But I believe that stuff like YouNow and TikTok and YouTube, and especially also Instagram very much so, you know, that... any sort of like, like if your kid wants to be a model or something like that, be very, very careful. Always be in the room.
Right.
If your kid wants to be a child star or anything to do with that kind of, you know, a lot of the people that gravitate towards that, and especially in the digital era, you know, like there was one case that I brought up in the book. That, you know, does come straight out of DOJ's Project Safe Childhood, where, you know, one of the many convicted cases, and this one also involved either WhatsApp or Kick, and the guy was pretending to be like a talent scout for models, and he would reach out to the girls and, you know, eventually, you know, get pictures, and one of them even tried to meet, and what's really sad, Daniel Tosh, the comedian, did, like, that was one of the first places that I learned. That's like, that was where I first heard about the whole like YouTube wake up thing.
Yeah,
was looking into what he was talking about with this what was it, the Seven Awesome Kids Network, and he's talking about this really, really like fishy YouTube channel that's got like billions of views and definitely seems to be catering to an audience of pedophiles, using very young girl models and gymnasts and whatever. Right. And a couple of years later, that guy was convicted of, this is the messed up thing. The parents dropped the kid off at a motel with this guy. Like, don't. Like, I mean, like, I just don't get it.
No.
Like, this, okay. What would it was like, he was paying out, like, five figures per month to some of these girls and wow. or their caretakers. possibly were pocketing that. You know, that's what happens in the case of a lot of these child stars. Is they're just grist for the mill.
Yeah.
And their parents are using them and exploiting them financially and turning an eye to any other kind of exploitation that might go on. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, how can people, I mean, I'll put the link to your book, but how can people support your work? Because this was one of the most comprehensive and like palatable book. Because I've read like the Franklin scandal books. This one, though, you did such a, like, you just hit so many tops. So how can people support your work and all those things like that?
The book's available. Like I said, there's a Kindle Unlimited. If you've got that, you can read for free right now. It's also available for Kindle and paperback at Amazon. If you prefer, I think it's also, you can get it at barnesandnoble.com, have it delivered either to your home or for pickup at the store there. You can also find me online at philfairbanks.com, philfairbanks.com, and also thegoldwater.com is where a lot of the topics in this is stuff that I've been writing about for years in thegoldwater.com. Well, there's a section specifically dedicated to the pedogate, and so that's where a lot of these stories got started, is right there. Check out thegoldwater.com. Those are the folks that employ me at the moment, and so that I'm able to have the time to write. So thegoldwater.com, tora3.com is another one of the side projects that we work on. For right now, it's non-monetized in any way, but that it's also completely ad-free for that reason. But it's an alternative to like YouTube or whatever, that offers video streaming and video sharing.
Oh, very cool.
And basically don't break U.S. law. No DMCA, obviously, animal crushing follow the U.S. law, right. And we're not going to kick your stuff off of the servers. So if you're looking for a place to back up your stuff, because if you got stuff stored at YouTube,
right,
and one day you find yourself foul of the people who make rules about what you're allowed to say online or not. Cause that's an issue that I had my Facebook account deleted,
right?
Because apparently you can't say pedo-gay. You can't say that. It's the same thing at YouTube. Like if you say like predators or pedophiles, or, you use certain keywords and you are instantly not eligible for monetization.
Right.
So, but yeah, and like that's today. Eventually, like I can see them totally trying to, using, those dangerous conspiracy theorists, like there's the comet ping pong guy who went in there with a gun, whatever that mess was, and they will always use something like that as as their reason for clamping down on why you can't talk about this or that. I've talked to organizations that are like anti-trafficking organizations, actual like 501c3 organizations, right, that work with like rescuing kids, and they've had issues with Facebook and it's just so ironic to me, especially when you consider that like that's a nexus of where a lot of this, Zuckerberg platforms,
right,
a nexus of where a lot of this is going on.
That's
if you want to support my work, definitely check out the book. I've got another one on the way.
Great, great.
And hopefully, hey, maybe when that one's done, we can talk again.
I would love to, dude. I'm going to put all those links in the show notes. Thanks so much for being on the show. And thanks for all your hard work, because I know that how much research went into that book would probably blow people's minds. So,
yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's years in the works, but yeah. It was so great for it to be over. If that makes any sense, you know, like it was not fun. It was not fun at the time. I did have nightmares. I did have insomnia. I did have, started to have panic attacks, that I hadn't had panic attacks in years, but it was so, like, you know, I don't know if it changes, like, if there's one survivor out there that reads it and is helped by it, or if there is, you know, somebody who's on the fence about all this, you know, these kinds of topics. I hope it's a good book that you can give to your skeptic friend, you know, like, because, you know, the preaching to the choir is fine and good, and, you know, and it's good to share information with people who are already on the same page. But I think it's really vital that we find ways to communicate these topics to people who, you know, who aren't as interested, and, you know, and they will definitely push the conspiracy theory angle. So, yeah, you know, if you've got that friend out there who doesn't believe in this kind of stuff, then send them a copy of this book and see what they think after a few chapters. You know, let them thumb through the bibliography first, because this is not, you know, it's not Breitbart and InfoWars as my sources. No, this is The Guardian and the New York Times and the Columbia Journalism Review and several, you know, academic papers.
Right.
And FOIA documents and things.
Well, I appreciate you.
But before I talk your ear off, thanks again. Absolutely.
Come on anytime, dude. I love all your work is awesome. And you let me know when the next book comes out.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. You take care.
Absolutely. All right, fella. Hey, you have a great rest of the day.
You too, man. Take care.
Will do. You bye-bye. Too. Thanks, man.